Good evening. My name is Wilhelm, and this is the 28th episode of the Noodle Noodles podcast, and episode 14 if you're following the track in English. With me tonight, I have João from Portugal.
Hi, I'm João Mariano. I'm from Portugal, and I live in Almeirim. It's a very small city almost next to Lisbon. That is our country's capital. And I'm a big fan of RPGs, and talking about that.
So, what have you been playing lately?
Oh, lately I've been playing Marvel role-playing. We've tried out the first act of the game that came out with the name Breakout. So it has been a lot of fun. I've demo played it a lot at our monthly meetups in Lisbon, and it has been a blast. Yeah, it's very, very fun. The dice pool is a bit hard to get around at first. It's not very intuitive, and we need a lot of D8s. So it's that dice size that we can't have enough of. And besides that, we've tried D&D Next at the playtests of D&D Next at our monthly meetup. And I have going in and out Chronicle of Geist the Sin Eaters. So we can't stay playing the same game a lot of time in a row. So we always jump to the new shiny thing. So
yes, I recognize that. years ago, we played a campaign in The Shadow of Yesterday, and that was a 6-session consecutive game. And that was my personal record for ever running a game. I got a diploma from the players for managing to run a game for that long time.
I thought I was the only one. So. It's glad to hear that it happens the same to you. So. Yeah. I know Soul System. I also have a copy here. So it's another difficult name to pronounce. It's Edo. Convenient. Yes. So, yeah, but Soul System is very, very interesting. It's a nice, I'll try to say mix, but a nice version of the original Shadow of Yesterday rules. So, yeah. It's very cool. And what have you been playing?
Oh, only my own stuff. Basically, we meet up maybe 5 or 6 times a year to have house cons at my place where we play for 3 days straight.
Oh. Nice.
And this time around, we played a lot of The Daughters of Verona, the Shakespeare game. And then we did, we played some A State of Mind, which is my time travel game. And we had a good time.
Okay, even if you were playtesting, you had a good time. It was not nerve-wracking.
No.
Oh God, the rules don't work.
Well, firstly, the games are beyond playtesting these days. The Dots of Rona, the new edition, isn't released yet, but we have been playing it for almost a year now, so everyone is quite familiar with it. And then the group of players are sort of used to playtesting, so we sometimes have to abort games and just say, oh, what's broken with this game, and then we have a discussion. So they are used to games that don't work out very well.
Okay. Yeah,
and no
when
stress.
You have new projects that we're trying to design, it's hard. For me, it's hard because I've tried some to design some games, and it's hard to call people to the attention. Oh, let's try and play test my game. it's a little bit hard to me. It's like I'm trying to show off the game. That was why I was asking you.
When I first started running my games at conventions, I didn't say it was my game. I say, we're going to play this game. And they say, oh, cool, we'll play that. And then we play the game. And then I say, what did you think about it? And they say, well, it was okay, or that was bad, or something, whatever. And they say, okay, I wrote this game. And they go, oh, we got to play with the maker? Oh, the designer? Oh, excellent. I never played a game with a designer before. And they were very happy.
Covered playtesting.
Yes. But then I think it made it easier to give frank feedback about what they thought of the game. If I had told them from the outset that, I wrote this game, I'd like to test it on you, I think they would be a bit careful about saying that the game didn't work, or that I didn't like it, or whatever.
Yeah, trying not to hurt your feelings.
Yeah, something like that. And that's why I love playing with my friends, because they don't mind hurting my feelings.
Oh, that's the...
When you're a game designer, you really need some good enemies to play with.
Yeah. Your personal gaming design nemesis. I'll try to get some enemies from it. It will be hard, but I'll try it.
But you said that you have monthly game meetups.
Oh, yeah. Here in Portugal, we have a very small gaming scene. We must be 100 of RPG fans. So the best, closest thing that we can get to an RPG convention are monthly meetups that we have in Lisbon and in Oporto. And we can gather almost like 10 to 20 people at a time. We run it at every second Sabbath, second Saturday of the month, and we gather to play and discuss and talk about our cheese to a public space, shopping mall, something like that. And we gather up and we try to start one or two gaming tables and play different kinds of RPGs. We don't have a national convention, a role-playing national convention. We have board games, a lot of board games conventions here in Portugal. In the last years it has exploded a lot to the people's awareness playing board games. And sometimes we join the board gaming conventions to have RPGs there, but RPG is not very big here.
Okay. Did I hear you right that there were about 100 role players in Portugal that you know about?
We don't have exact numbers. My personal estimate is about 500 people playing RPGs.
Okay.
I don't think there are 1,000 people playing here, but we don't have numbers.
No.
It's very hard to gather people around the same place or convention or even forum, because some people don't even know other groups who play RPGs. They are very isolated, very close-knit. So they play RPGs, it's their thing, their own group of friends thing, but they don't talk about it with other groups, or don't even try to find if there are other groups available or eager to meet and talk about RPGs. Most of the times people only search for other groups when they don't have a group, because the group has ended. So it's a very close-knit scene. Besides, it's very, very isolated and small.
But you have a podcast.
Yeah.
In the Portuguese scene.
Yeah. We have some adventuring guys trying to do podcasts in Portuguese. I have one. Mine is Udonautas. It's something like Udonauts. And it comes out very regularly. It doesn't have a lot of frequency. And we also have one called Jogador Senador by Ricardo Tavares. And that's a nice podcast if you would understand Portuguese. It talks a lot about game theory and teams and a lot of deep discussion about RPGs. And we have some listeners that there are not a lot, but because we speak Portuguese and the European Portuguese is it's almost similar. It has some difference from Brazilian Portuguese. We also have Brazilian listeners, and the gaming scene over there is gigantic compared to ours.
That's pretty cool, that you have maybe 1,000 role players then in Portugal, 500, maybe 1,000, and you have two podcasts in Portuguese. And on the Swedish scene, there must be tens of thousands of tabletop role players, but tens of thousands. And we have three podcasts, and one is sort of slumbering since the podcast guy got the child. Which apparently takes a lot of time.
No, it messes up with the sound, the little child crying in the back.
Yeah.
It messes with the sound, so the baby is waiting for her to grow up and starting to shut up, so he can do the podcast quietly. Maybe that's it.
Quick break. We don't have a child, but we have a small dog, and he wants a late night walk. So okay. I had a discussion with my girlfriend, and she agreed to take him for a walk.
Oh, nice, nice. I have a cat and a dog, but they're the cat is in house, but it's not doing a lot of noise. And our dog is outside in the backyard, so no problem okay. there. We can hear him sometimes barking, but it's quiet now. We can do the podcast easily. Yeah,
I think besides myself, the dog is the most recurring guest on the podcast. We usually hear him in the background walking about or begging for food or something. Almost every episode.
Yeah, yeah. We have been broadcasting some video casts live through Google Hangout Plus here in Portugal and in Brazil. So when I'm a guest at some of the video casts, sometimes my cat appears in the back in the couch.
Oh, there.
Have you tried Google Hangout Plus?
Yes, I have even gamed over Hangout once.
Oh, nice.
But that was on my old computer, and it wasn't quite fast enough to do Hangouts. So it was a very surreal experience with delays that were out of this world.
Yeah, it's very demanding systems-wise. I've upgraded my computer, so we've also been playing Marvel through Tabletop Forge. Yeah. Using webcams and mix. It's very nice because I live in a small city that's so quite far from Lisbon. So I don't have any RPG players here. So when I'm not going to Lisbon, I try to run and play some games online. So it's my escape, my plan.
Yeah.
Escape.
Have you seen that there are gaming conventions over Hangout these days?
Yeah. Indie Plus, right?
Yes, Indie Plus. And there's AetherCon as well, I think it's called. But yes, Indie Plus.
Yeah. The time difference, it's very hard to manage. So.
Well, it's smaller difference for you than me.
We have 1 hour difference. Yeah, we try to manage it.
No, but
it, through mail.
Yeah, but it was very US centric last time round. I participated in one of the panel discussions because it was on the weekend, so I could like match up my schedule so I could be on that. But I didn't do any games.
It was what 4 hours time difference.
Oh, it's more.
Five.
It was 6 or 7 hours or something like that. And
That's hard. we try to podcast. We podcast quite a lot with Brazilian fans and Brazilian friends of ours. And it's nowadays it's 4 hours difference. So we have to juggle that as well. Have to manage that in order to play or do some podcast.
Do you have any own games yet?
No, not yet. The funny thing is that in Portugal we don't have any national editions of role-playing games. We don't have a European Portuguese edition of Dungeons and Dragons or Vampire the Masquerade or Call of Cthulhu. The only translations that we now have are the ones that come from Brazil. Back in the day, we had a national translation of D&D's Red Box basic set from Metzer, I think.
Yeah.
And it was the only thing that came out, and it didn't have a lot of, I don't know, expression, or it didn't make any profit, and we haven't had any more editions in Portuguese.
Okay.
There are some people who are trying to design their own games. The Ricardo Tavares that I mentioned back. He's a prolific designer. In his podcast website, he has a lot of different projects he's trying to develop. Big news are that in one of his submissions to a Brazilian Portuguese online initiative to create games, role-playing games in a week called RPG Genesis, he developed a game called Tea Time RPG. that's about time traveling Victorian lords who use tea to travel in time. It is a recurring war between the Earl Grey and Jarling House of space and time faring monopoly. So, and he got it, he got a deal to publish it in Brazil. So we're very happy. But it's very hard to try and publish something here in Portuguese, because it is a very small market. So we don't have a very easy future concerning that. So, but there are some things, some projects that are published online and people can access it and download it and give some feedback. But it's nothing in a great commercial scale or something like that. It's very indie based effort.
Well, all the development in Sweden is also indie scale. There are some companies, the big names of the Swedish scene, but when you look behind the logo and investigate, it's a couple of guys doing it in their spare time.
Yeah, it's really DIY, right? Do it yourself, kind of thing, right?
And it's much easier these days to do-it-yourself gaming and to spread it with the internet and print on demand. You can make your game and print it in 5 copies, and each of those 5 books will look like a real book, even if the game only has a print run of 5 copies. So it's hard to get rich doing that.
Sorry.
It's hard to get rich doing that, but if you want your game as a book, you can do it.
Yeah, here in Portugal, we have a recurring idea that if it isn't a big commercial effort to publish something, it's not a real game. So it's very hard to to go beyond that misconception that it has to be a big printing product in order to prosper. So, and we also have a problem with translations because most of the guys here have a lot of experience playing games in English because the original came in English here. And we are very, very, very demanding of the translations. If it is not in Portuguese, European Portuguese, it's very strange to us. So even if we have the Brazilian translations, most of the guys don't try it out because it's in Brazilian Portuguese.
I recognize that if it wasn't a lot of work to publish, it's not worth it. We had a discussion on indie gaming, and one of the traditional gamers said, well, I don't want to play games that just someone wrote. And I don't know where he got his game from, if they were found in a mine somewhere or whatever, but I recognize the sentiment that, no, I don't want to play a small game. I want a big game, a proper game, not a game that wasn't written by someone.
Yeah, with a lot of supplements and full cover and 300 pages that we don't have time to read.
Yes, and adverts in magazines and the whole nine yards.
Yeah, but I would be glad if we had here. So we could have the big games, the small effort, the indie style games and all that, but we don't have a market to sustain that. We hardly have a big community that plays any kind of role-playing game. So it's like starting by the wrong side, by the wrong end. You know, no, we want to have big games full of color and all, but we don't have people to buy them. So it's very hard. But when you present a kind of small publishing effort, a small publishing product, people don't give it a serious look. But maybe it's a problem in perception. Because if we try to bring in new players and new fans, maybe they don't have that misconception, you know? It's a very well established thing in the past that comes from 20 years or 10 years back that you have to have that kind of production values. Maybe if you show it as, it's a game, we try to play it right now, and here it is, you know, what you have to read and need to know about it. Maybe we'll play the game as well. So it would be such as fun as if it would be a kind of big game. I don't know.
I think it's easier to make new gamers than to convert a gamer from one kind of game to another. I have had a great influx of new gamers at my table lately. And almost all of those are people who haven't been gaming much at all. Maybe they played some video games. Maybe they have played Monopoly when they were children. But they haven't played any role-playing games. And when they to my table, they don't have any preconceptions about what a game is supposed to be and what a role-playing game is supposed to be, but they can enjoy the games. It was so fun because we had a new player, a woman, who joined our game this last con. And, well, we played sort of only GM-less indie games. So she played a few of those and got a real good grasp of what role-playing is, assuming that you by role-playing you mean GM-less indie games, story games. And then one player tried to explain what kind of games he usually played, and he played like a traditional fantasy game. And like, well, it's like the games you've been playing, but like there's a game master and he decides stuff and he runs the adventure and set the scene. And she looked like a question mark in her face because she didn't understand how a game could, how a role-playing game could have a game master who decided everything.
Yeah, her own conception of role-playing was very different because she started with that GM-less game.
Yes.
Some people call it GM-ful.
Yes,
some
I know.
Call it GM-less as well.
Oh, but we've been very busy. Well, I'm in a stage of life where I'm very busy. I don't have much time for gaming. And those GM-less games that are zero prep, where you just sit down and play sort of like a board game, even if it is a role-playing game, they are so convenient. It's hard to find the same group of players multiple times so you can play a standing, long-standing campaign or anything like that, but just sit down one evening, play for 4 hours, and then you're done. It's so convenient.
Yeah. We can have it all. We can have the big campaign model games and the casual games, because those one-session, one-shot kinds of games that we have very low prep, they are casual, so we can play it in spare time that we have. We are having a dinner party and people are trying to have fun. Why not play one kind of those games, like Fiasco or something like that? And we can also have the big campaign ones. I'm like you. I don't have the time to bear a lot, and it's very hard for me to frequently get the group, the game group, together and play the game. So, most of the time I focus on those kind of games. So it's more satisfying for me. So I can play a lot of them and I don't have to compromise a lot. So it's a very nice thing. One of the things that we found out while talking with the Brazilian guys, it's that, RPG scene are not very different from one another. They can vary in scale, because if you are in the United States, there are millions of them, and you have a lot of players. But the same game culture permeates all players in all world, because we started with the same. So it's changing, right? Scandinavian countries have a small, I don't know, but the difference with the LARP scene and the Jeep form and all that. But the countries that started with the traditional D&D first RPG game ever experience, they have almost the same gaming culture. We use a lot of English words while playing. We read a lot in English. We read almost the same fantasy and science fiction novels. So it's very alike. It's like we almost speak the same role-playing language. There are some cultural differences, but in the, for example, social conventions, while getting to a person's house, you bring on food or you don't. Or, for example, I heard your episode about Korea, that they don't play in their family's houses. They try to get a very neutral space to play in. And here in Portugal, most of the times we play in our other houses. Most of the parents don't have a problem with role playing. They don't understand it, but they know most parents let us in and play in their houses. Or sometimes we choose a shopping mall or something like that, but we don't have a lot of problems with playing in each other's house with them.
I liked when I had Julia on the show and she talked about the Italian scene, how they meet up in these venues that look like the bars from fantasy games.
They did
their conventions there and had good food in a good
like the small rustic places that you meet.
And when she told me about that, I was like, oh, I have to go to Italy to attend a gaming convention. I have to go to Italy.
Yeah, and our conception of a gaming convention is always big. Okay, and from hearing your podcast, I found out that in Italy and in there in Sweden, you don't have a lot of people at the convention, right? You have, what, a dozen, 20 people, right?
Well, it depends on the convention. Of course, we have these small house cons where friends meet up to play. And then there are quite a few small conventions with maybe 100 or 150 gamers.
But the most recurring ones are the ones that you bring people over to your house, right?
But are we calling those conventions or are they just game nights with a group of friends?
That's a nice question.
Yeah. And then once a year we have GothCon with 1,500 gamers.
Oh, envy.
But while it's nice to have a big con, in my experience, having a convention in your home, you bring over some friends or friends of friends, and there's 10 people or 15 people, and you play, compared to going a convention of 100 times that size, you don't get better games because it's a bigger convention. You don't have more fun because it's a bigger convention. Maybe there's a wider range of games that are offered, but if there's a small game, you can always suggest the games you want to play, and you will get excellent gaming all through the weekend, even if it's a very small convention. So,
I've never been to a big convention, but sometimes sometimes it seems like a celebration of the
yes,
art,
of
right?
course, and you get to meet people if you're not strictly level gaming, but to meet and greet. Then, of course, a bigger convention is a better convention. I've been looking at maybe I should go to Gen Con with, I don't know exactly how many people there are, 50,000, something like that. So it's yet another 10 or 100 times the size of Sweden's biggest convention. But I would only be able to see like a small bit of that convention. The rest of it would be there, but I wouldn't experience it.
Yeah, it's a gamble. You don't know exactly what you will find out, and you have that urge to see it all and experience it all, and then possibly you come back a little bit disappointed.
Yeah,
but you still have the desire to come back next year and experience what you haven't experienced yet. And then it's recurring. You always go to Gen Con, and some years from that, you realize, oh, Gen Con isn't the same thing as it was to be. I don't know. But I would really like to be to a big convention. I know there are some medium size, or I don't know what is a proper size for convention, but next to us in Spain, there are big conventions. I've heard about Essen as well, so it's a big board gaming and role playing convention as well in Germany. And there are some in England that are quite interesting.
Yeah.
But lately it has been hard to get out of the country. So. But that's also the dream. I have the dream that you have to go to Gen Con.
Yeah.
It will be an epic journey to the United States, then an epic tracking through 4 days of gaming.
Well, let's continue to talk about Gen Con because none of us has been to Gen Con. And I I listen to convention reports, people going to the convention and talking about it on their podcasts, and I read player reports and everything, and I realize, well, if I went to Gen Con, I would go to the Games on Demand event and run Nordic games for the Americans to show them, partly to play games I'm interested in, but also to show them, well, there's a scene beyond yours. And if I go to GothCon, I will go to the gaming lounge and I will run Nordic indie games for people who come by. And if I have a game at my place or a convention at my place, I would run Nordic indie games for the people who come there. So I wonder if Gen Con would be all that different except for the inconvenience of actually going to the US and finding a hotel room and, well, people being better at English than I am.
Well, in Gen Con, you have a lot of new things coming out and being announced. So that's a nice thing to actually be there and get a copy of that newest game that came out. For example, in the last Gen Con, if you went to the Fantasy Flight panel, you would came out of there with the new Star Wars RPG, so that would be nice.
Yeah.
And some freebies that you could get in Gen Con. But if the gaming experience in itself would be very different, but you would be amazed by the gigantic scale of that show. So, I don't know. Maybe you would meet some of the authors that you haven't met yet.
No, that would be very cool to meet the people who have written games that I enjoy and shake hands and say, thanks, I played your game. It was very nice. Thank you for writing that game. That would be very cool.
But I'm asking some rules clarification. By the way.
by the way.
What did you mean with that? But in the small indie games, most of the authors are very, very active online, so you can ask that question.
Very
so
approachable.
It's very easy to ask them, right?
Yes, and they're even what the people that we call the big indie authors, their operation is so very, very small, comparatively speaking. So if you actually contact them and say, I played your game and I have a question, they will be overjoyed. Someone has played my game and I'd happy to help you explain how to play this or resolve your questions or whatever.
Yeah, I love that. And most of the companies, the most well-established RPG companies, or more commercially successful ones, are still trying to manage the direct communication with the fans. It's taking a lot of time to do a proper job at having a nice PR and a nice customer assistance, right? Most of them, for example, Wizards of the Coast is very hard, and to have frank communication with them, or most of the companies, I don't know, are still very hard to get by, to communicate something. Fantasy Flight is a very a nice company, rules-wise, because they constantly upgrade their FAQ or their rules FAQ, so it's very, they have a nice customer support. But some of the companies are very hard to go by. I don't know if you have noticed it. Maybe it's a misconception.
I don't know. I buy a lot of board games. I don't play a lot of board games. So there could be stuff in the rules that I don't notice. I play Memoir 44, Richard Borg's game about World War II. I like that quite a lot, and I'm sure there's an updated, errata'd version of the rules online for me. But, well, the gameplay's fine the way it's written, so I haven't bothered to look.
If it ain't broken, don't fix.
Oh, exactly. And then if we try to fix it, everyone has to be aware of that fix and so on. I used to play Car Wars back in the early 90s. Something like that.
In the previous century.
Last century, I played Car Wars. And that game was, it was a fun game, but it was heavily errata'd in the Autoduel Quarterly magazine. And everyone didn't read the magazine. And those who did maybe didn't read every issue. And then there was this constant discussion about what you could do and what you couldn't do, and what was allowed by the rules and which what was frowned upon and so on. So it was just a mess. It would have been better to play everything, the game, the way it was written in the basic set, because then everyone would know, would have the same opinions of how the game worked.
Yeah, you would have to choose the proper version of Errata that you would play that night. Oh, we're going to use actually the actualized version 3.4. Let's do it. That's the version that we'll be playing today. So some people say that the end of role playing or gaming in general is to have fun, right?
Yeah.
And most of the time that's the point. But sometimes I want to guarantee that I have the most of the fun. And for me, that is using the rule set that mostly give me that. So, I know that in some sense, some role playing games don't get worse if you're using a past version of the rules. Okay, it depends also on the group.
Yeah.
But I'm on that group of people that says system matters. So I'm that kind of guy. So.
Yeah.
But I'm not very keen on the quite detailed rule sets for role playing scenes. I'm not. But I'll try to play the games by the rules, play it raw, and trying to see what's the point of that the author was trying to say or the design team were trying to do, and don't like to also rule things a lot.
10 or 15 years ago, if you ask a role player what was the game you started with, they would say Drakar och Demoner. Which was a Swedish basic role-playing mechanic fantasy game. Everyone played Drakar och Demoner. But every group had their own house rules and their own interpretations of the rules and employed varying amounts of errata to the rules. So even if everyone played Drakar och Demoner, I wonder how many groups actually played the same game. If you look closely at how they played it.
Yeah, and do you think that that disconnects people? That because they aren't playing the same game, you think there are some dysfunctional relations those groups? Or?
I think it was a good thing, because then you always had something to talk about and you had something in common, some common ground. Even if it wasn't common ground once you actually sat down to play with them, we don't use that rule, it's stupid. But at least you got to the table because you had this shared thing with Drakar och Demoner. And these days there are no big games on the Swedish scene that everyone plays. It has been fragmented in the last decade.
And not even Dungeons and Dragons, Call of Cthulhu?
No. Well, some people play those games, but there are no games that work like Drakar och Demoner did in the 80s and 90s that everyone knew those games. Of course, Call of Cthulhu is popular. Most people have played one or a few editions of Dungeons and Dragons, at least once or twice. Some people only play Dungeons and Dragons, but we don't have that common ground anymore. We have been fragmented.
Yeah. Here in Portugal, most of the times role-playing games are synonymous of Dungeons and Dragons. So it was the first one. It had been brought by people who came from the United States in the 80s and beginnings of the 80s. So they brought along the Dungeons and Dragons. So most people play Dungeons and Dragons. They don't play RPG. Okay. They played Dungeons and Dragons. Different editions of Dungeons and Dragons, but they played.
Okay.
Some people now are transitioning to Pathfinder because of the difference between 4th edition and 3.5.
Yeah.
But there are also people who were big fans of Colosseum, so they played a lot of Call of Cthulhu, even Pendragon. Pendragon is not very usual nowadays. But there are a lot of people who play that. Some people like also the Warhammer 40,000, RPGs line. So it's somewhat popular today. And back in 2006, we have a forum for game the multiplayer game here in Portuguese called Abro Jogo. And in Abro Jogo, we started an online community to discuss RPGs. And it was when the indie scene in America, the Forge-based one, started to expand and get their views across. So we had a lot of excitement for indie RPGs, a lot of discussion. But there was a clash between the traditional people like traditional RPGs. People were excited with the new ones, and there were some flame wars. Unfortunately, we are a very small country and we had a flame war. So it was, yeah, some people got insulted, some people got banned. But it was all, in my opinion, it was all a misunderstanding. But the indie games, got established. We played a lot of Dogs in the Vineyard, Shadow of Yesterday, even some games that nowadays are almost unknown. I even played, With Great Power. I don't know if you know that one.
I have heard of it, but I haven't played it.
Yeah, okay. So, we played a lot of them, but the team got a little subdued with the time, and some people even play that, and one of the sides didn't win over the other or something like that. Some people play traditional ones, some people play indie ones, but I play them all. Indie ones or traditional ones, I play them all. Like, we used to have one traditional one indie one. Fiasco is a mainstay of most of our monthly meetups. Lady Blackbird as well. So we have a mixed selection of role-playing games. We don't have LARPs here.
Okay.
It's a thing that really didn't got attention from, or doesn't get played a lot here in Portugal, LARPs. I don't know why. Maybe we don't have a sense of the ridicule in playing out the characters and dressing and all, or because if we have a very small scene, we don't have the amount of people needed to get a nice LARP going on. But the LARP here isn't quite inexistent. We haven't tried Jeep Farm yet, so I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know any who has tried.
The Americans are very keen on Jeep Farm these days, so I'm sure you can find good resources in English if you want to try it.
I would try some Nordic RPGs, not in the Jeep Farm fashion first, then I would try Jeep Farm. I don't know. It's very hard to sell the idea to play RPGs around here, so to play Jeep Farm would be even harder. So. Maybe with some cheater companies or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'll try it eventually. I'll try it. So do you have English versions of your games?
Yes, I do. Not all of them, but most of them are available in both Swedish and English, or only English.
Okay.
I wrote my first game in Swedish. The second I wrote in Swedish and English. And the English edition outsold the Swedish by a factor of by 3. So for every Swedish copy, I sold 3 English copies. So from then on, I only write in English.
But did you have international buyers, or it was the Swedish?
No, it's international buyers. So it's easier to make a splash somewhere else than, oh, he's one of us. It can't be any good. But, this is a game from a Swedish designer. Did you know that? It sounds much more awesome.
No, God, here in Portugal, I think it's the other way around. Oh, a Portuguese guy's trying to do a
okay.
game. Oh, okay. Most people don't get excited about that. They're starting to, but they don't get motivated. Quite excited about that. A discussion that we've been having nowadays, it's just about using English or using Portuguese or trying to translate in the games. And we're being discussing, because it's very hard to publish your RPG. It is even harder to translate it from another language because people find it some chosen terms, that we should try to do it in our languages. Try to do the games in our languages. Try to support the games in our own languages, because it is a different I don't know how can I say it? Because it's writing in our own language. We convene a message and convene an idea and a thing about our games that is different than trying to write it, even if it's harder, trying to write it in a other language. Some meanings of the words get lost when you try to write it in English. So, or in another language. So, we'll try to support that idea of writing it in Portuguese in to Portuguese fans first and then try to expand it to other markets.
No, but it is hard to write and translate games, especially if you're not a professional translator. I'm very much not a professional translator, and my English is not very good. My written English is even more horrible. But that hasn't prevented me from having some success with my games in English. Even for Americans buy it, English people buy it, who speak English as their native language. And I think that is fun.
Yeah, yeah. Getting your game to other people is fun. Yeah, and there is a rising interest from the English dominated markets to see what the role playing games are that people create in other parts of the world. So, and in America, a year back, people are trying to find out, okay, but there are other markets. What are they trying to do that back there? So, we have to correspond to that demand. And even English is the universal language. So, if I want to play a Japanese game, I can play it in Japanese. So I can't read Japanese. So I have to wait for a translation. And English is always the chosen language to translate it. Even if I want to play a German one, I don't speak German, I don't read German, so I'll have to wait for a translation.
Yeah.
One of my favorite games is Angle by Federin Schwer, and I only can understand the supplements that were released by White Wolf, so.
Yeah. I have a favorite game called Bloodlust, which is French. And
yeah.
I don't speak French, but it was translated into German, and I don't speak German, but I can read it if I take my time. So I have this game in German, and if I'm going to play it, I will have to maybe not rewrite the whole rule book, but at least write the rule summary in Swedish. So we will be playing a game that has been through at least two layers of translation, but I think we will have fun anyway. And I think we will get the general idea of the original game.
Maybe if you get some expression wrong, it will be in better game. Because
you get garbage again. You have to restart.
Or something that was not quite interesting and in the original. It would be great. In Swedish, so something they got wrong with translate. Hey, nice one! That was the coolest idea in that game. Oh,
mistranslations.
I can understand French. I can read French because of being Portuguese. It's a Romance language, so it's easier for me. I have a small French game here called Notre Tombeau. It's about strange disappearances in the Paris sewer, so it's very nice. And it's a self-contained game, it's a very rules-like one. I have a Spanish game as well, they call it the Century of Gold in Spain, where you had all the swashbuckling and sword fights and all. It's and it is based on the theater tradition in Spain. And I also have an Italian one, but that's about the chivalry quests of Roland, the Chanson de Roland. It's interesting as well. Because if I go to a different country, I'll try to find out a gaming store there and try to pick up a game in that language. But those are Romance languages, so it's easy for me to understand. I can go to to Sweden and pick up one of your games, but it'd be harder for me to understand.
Yes. I have a friend who likes to go to Japan, and he speaks some Japanese, but he doesn't read it much. But anyway, he went there and he brought back a Japanese game called Witch Quest, a game about teenage witches and their cats. And it had color pictures there. We thought, oh, this must be awesome. It's about, well, witches and their cats. But we couldn't play it. But then it was translated into English. So now we have played that game. And we had a lot of fun. But like we said earlier, it was only when the game was translated into English that it became possible for us to enjoy it.
Mm. I've tried to convince people to play Cat by John Wick.
Yeah.
It's been hard. I even tried to convince people to try an anime convention, a tactical convention here in Portugal. I tried to convince people to play Maid RPG, yeah. which is also Japanese, but I got the English translation, and it was hard. I know there are some games from Japan that seem cool, like Tendra Bancho Zero.
Yes.
Yeah, it's coming out by Kickstarter, and a Sword World, I think it's Japanese as well. But it would be hard trying to do it, even if it is a fan translation. I would be worried if they missed something that I would like to know from the original game. So, but now we have translation tools that you can put it all online translated for us. So. Mm-hmm. Google has to try to invent a new tool that can translate audio from any language. So it would be cool to listen to other people's podcasts in other countries.
Yes. Well, on the YouTube, you can get subtitles for any American or English language video. And they could pipe that string through the Google Translate, so you could actually get subtitles in any language. But given the quality of the subtitler, it would be a very interesting experience to play games written that way.
It's almost like importing movies from the Chinese.
Yeah.
From the Chinese pirate market. You get those funny translations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I listened to the Mom's Basement podcast. An American gaming podcast. And after the Game Chef, they had taken all the Italian entries and pasted them into Google Translate so they could review them on the show. And that was pretty cool, I think, that we now have the tools to read games if they're in electronic form in languages that we wouldn't have a chance of speaking otherwise or understanding otherwise.
Yeah, and a thing that grabs a lot of attention from people are the graphic design of the product. So even if they don't understand what it's about, they see the graphic design of a book, of a role-playing book, and they seem quite intrigued by it. In Brazil, one of the lately released games was Violentina. And it's a GMless game about crime stories based on Tarantino's movies. Right? And it's a very nice artifact. It's very well laid out, and it has a nice design, all the exploitation movie-like. And it got the attention of people at the Story Game Store. And they're discussing, okay, it seems cool, this game, what is it about? So people try to translate it to us. So, and you can have some ideas across people, even if you don't know the language. Because the graphic design can tell you a lot about the game. Okay? But if you don't have that kind of production values in your game, it's very hard to get it through people. The do-it-yourself industry, indie, small-scale indie industry, or cottage industry, like someone said once, doesn't get that production values to get it across. Because we are a visual-focused society. So, right? So people get a lot of attention to that. That goes back to the thing I said earlier about if you don't have a big production values in your game, it doesn't get a lot of attention.
Yeah.
And people don't consider it the real deal. So,
it is getting late. I had a lot of fun talking with you about gaming and the Portuguese gaming scene and going to Gen Con and everything.
thank you for having me in the show and your generosity for having me. It was great.
Thank you. And then the usual Nose Noodles music starts. And